So, Mother's Day. Which moms are having a good Mother's Day today? And be honest, think about it. Be brave. Who's not having a good Mother's Day? James? Really? For many moms, Mother's Day is not very good at all. And it could be for many different reasons. Maybe because they're the only parent. That's probably a pretty big reason for a lot of people in our country. And the expectations, I think, for another. A friend of mine who has 9 children and is pregnant with her 10th. She grew up in Zambia, and she wrote a Facebook post the other day. She says, "I don't really get this Mother's Day thing. I don't understand it." She says, "Not that I'm saying it's a bad holiday or that it's not worth doing, but she says there just seems to be a lot of expectation put on this day, a lot of hype, kind of out of proportion to other days like it. Like Father's Day doesn't get nearly the attention that Mother's Day does, unless, of course, you're Canadian Tire. In which case, you push for lots of sales that day, right? But there is a lot, and I kind of saw this year more than others, maybe just because I was noticing, but it seemed like, at least as far as 2 weeks back, there were things coming out for Mother's Day already. It could have been longer than that. I thought, my goodness, we're sort of getting into this whole Christmas kind of atmosphere for every kind of day, and it's Mother's Day. And in this blog, not a blog, Facebook post, my friend, she says, I think it puts a lot of expectations that don't get met, and that's the problem, is that mothers on this day put a lot of expectation upon others to treat them special and treat them right. And when it doesn't really measure up, it's not a very good day at all. And you can imagine on Mother's Day, you have dads wrestling with waffle irons that they've never looked at before and trying to figure these things out. And what is a waffle recipe anyway? And it just gets very complicated because there is a lot of expectation. And I'm not trying to downplay Mother's Day. I am here, after all, speaking on Mother's Day. What I'd like to talk about, though, is a little non-traditional. I'm hoping that this doesn't turn into "this is how you should be a mom" kind of message at all. I'm not trying to point out, and it's not my intention to point out, that the people that we're going to be talking about this morning are exceptional in any way as being mothers or parents. But I think there's things that we can learn. And, of course, God is in there. And I think the important thing to note about God is, even though that we call him a father, I think when you really read the Bible and you look at it, he also exemplifies what it is to be a mother. Because who else do mothers have to emulate but God? If God is our focus and the person that we should be emulating and trying to be like and trying to get close to, but all we can think about him is as a father, that's hard for women to kind of get close to. But I think if you really read the Bible, you'll notice and you'll see things that God really exemplifies what it is to be a mother and a nurturer as well. And we're going to look a little bit at that, but that's not the primary focus this morning. What I would like to look at, though, what we're going to be talking about, we're going to be looking at Ruth. And primarily, we're going to be looking at Naomi. But we are going to be looking at Ruth, because the book in which we read Naomi is called Ruth. And it's primarily about Ruth. But it's also very much about Naomi. You'll see. So, the story goes. Ruth takes place in context, in the time of the judges. That was a messed up time. You have to understand. If you read the book of Judges, I'm not sure if you have recently, and you get towards the end, it is really bad. It was not a good time at all. Everyone did. The book, end of the book of Judges, it says, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And you know, that's a recipe for disaster. And every so often, God would raise up a person to lead the nation for a little while. And they all had their foibles. They all had their faults. Some had more faults than they had good virtues, really. And towards the end, it was really bad. And one of the tribes did something really quite awful. And it almost led to a sort of a civil war. And this is about the time, most scholars think, that Ruth took place in about that time. And on top of that, there was a famine in the land. And famine, when you're an agrarian society and you depend on your economics, is everything comes from the land. Your food, your money, everything. And there's a famine and nature's just not quite working for you. That's tough. And especially when your political climate, social climate, is also messed up and you don't know whom to trust. You have a family, Elimelech, Naomi, Mahlon, and Chilion, depending on which way you pronounce it, they left. They left Bethlehem, and they went to Moab. Whether they took that circle route, I don't know. But you can kind of see, in relation to Bethlehem, or Bethlehem, which I think is Arabic, they had to go around the Dead Sea somehow and end up in Moab down there. Now, it is surmised, perhaps, that because Elimelech and his family could move or had the means to move, that Elimelech may have been well off, slightly anyway. Because we know, even today, in order to be able to move from one place to another, you need a certain amount of ready cash. And it seems they had that, so they had the ability to move. So they did, and they went to Moab and lived there, it says, for about 10 years, if not more. In that time, Mahlon and Chilion met two girls and got married. One married a woman named Ruth, the other a woman named Orpah. But then, at one point, Elimelech died, and then so did his two sons. And Naomi was left in a foreign land with nothing. Now you have to understand what it is for a woman in that culture, in that time, to be left without a husband. It's bad, folks. That's a bad situation. Women were very much dependent upon the men in their lives. And I'm not trying to be sexist, not at all. This is just the way it was. They left their father's house and they were given to another man as a husband to be his wife, and it was that man's job to protect her and to provide for her. And when that man, if that man died, then she was left with nothing. It'd be very difficult for her to go back to her father's house if indeed her father was even still alive. Lifespans being as they were. And you hoped that your children would stay alive, even if your husband died. And that's why sons were so important, because sons could take care of their aging mothers, since it was more often the case that a husband, the father, would die first. So you really depended, you really wanted a firstborn son, so that by the time dad kicked the bucket, he would be old enough to take care of mom. This is just practicalities. And it's sobering, but that's the way it was. But to have all three men in her life die is a tragedy beyond words. What else could she do? She's in a foreign land. She decides to leave and go back to where she came from and hopefully make some kind of life if she can. She's probably looking at going to die anyway. Maybe, and we don't know, but maybe she's hoping to meet someone who would be willing to marry her and take her under her wing, under their wing. So she leaves. Now, before we go any further, I have to talk about this word. In Hebrew, it's more of a harsh H. It's chesed. But for the remainder of this talk, I'm going to just say chesed. Because if I continue to say chesed, the people in the front row might not appreciate it. Chesed is translated most often in most English translations of the Old Testament as loving kindness. And that's a tough one. Because what does loving kindness mean to us as English thinkers? Not a lot, really. It doesn't really convey the depth that loving kindness, that chesed, is meant to convey. What it means to a Jewish or Hebrew person. I know this because I had to do a word study on it in Bible school. And it has depths of meaning you can't even imagine. God is the epitome, the embodiment of chesed. There's a psalm that talks about his loving kindness, and it just gets repeated over and over and over and over. I think it's Psalm 126, I'm not sure. But it goes, his loving kindness lasts forever. And then it describes something that God is, and then his loving kindness exists forever, and just goes on and on. And it's this word, chesed. Ruth, any scholar, Jewish or Christian, will tell you that Ruth is all about chesed. It's not mentioned really that many times in the book, but the actions of the people in it, and Ruth in particular, are all about chesed. And the definition that I stole from a book that I've been reading is it's one definition, but it's one of the best ones I've seen so far. Acts of benevolence that one does out of kindness, not out of any contractual obligation. And I think the key word in that definition is acts. It's not a feeling. It's not a wish. Chesed is acted out. When someone demonstrates chesed, it's always in something that they do. Okay? Very important. Very important in the Jewish mind. In the Greek mind, in the mind of the New Testament, it's a lot about thinking correctly, about believing internally something. But Jews, they don't have that concept at all. Anything that they believe is acted out. If you can't act it out, if you have the inability to do what you say you believe, you don't really believe it. That's just the way it is. And chesed is wrapped up in that. Okay? Chesed. Incidentally, Ruth, the book of Ruth is read on the Jewish festival of Shavuot. And it comes 49 days after Passover every year. 49 days, and then on the 50th day, they celebrate Shavuot. And then they read Ruth. Because what they're celebrating, the Feast of Weeks, what they're celebrating is the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai to the people of Israel. And for any devout Jew, the Torah is about chesed. It's about God's loving kindness towards his people. The Torah represents, for the devout Jew, something completely different, especially for the people, for the Jewish people, for the Israelite people at Mount Sinai, when they were given the Torah, it was something very different. It was something very very new. It was God working in a group of people. And in it were things and how to treat people and how to treat God that were very different from what they had previously experienced. From the lands around them, from the Egyptians. It was all about loving kindness. And there's some, you think, wow, there's some pretty strict rules in there. But when you read sort of between the lines and what God is trying to do, you realize that it's about treating people right. It's about treating God with the respect he deserves. And in there, in Leviticus 25, for instance, there's this section where that if a husband dies and he's married a woman, which would make him a husband, and he dies, the Torah had a rule that his brother then was to marry that woman and take care of her. So that man's name would continue in Israel, and also that woman would be taken care of. That's a good rule for that time. And you think, well, that's kind of restrictive for the poor brother. And maybe it is. But at the time, it took care of the widow. And it perpetuated the name of the man. And that was also very important. Because names were attached to land. And land, as I've already said, was very important. And making sure that land was kept within a family, so that people could provide for themselves. If you didn't have land, you had nothing, right? It was a bank account. And if you didn't have land, your bank account was drained. You just didn't have anything. And a woman with no husband also had nothing. So the Torah, in many, many ways, was meant to protect and provide for God's people. And so devout Jews, when they look at the Torah, they say, this is chesed, this is God's loving kindness towards us. And when they think of any book of the Bible, and in order to, of their Bible, the Hebrew Bible, and they want to read something that reminds them of the giving of the Torah, they read Ruth. And in Greek, the Feast of Weeks, Shavuot, 49 days after Passover, the 50th day, becomes known as Pentecost. And it's interesting that when God gave the Torah at the Mount of Sinai, there was flames, and there was fire, and there was thunder, and the sound of a rushing wind. And when the Holy Spirit came upon the followers of Jesus, there was flames, and the sound of a rushing wind. God's loving kindness was being poured out on his people. A person who is said to exemplify chesed is known as a chesed. And that means you go above and beyond what is required. It's not a contract, it's a covenant. And the idea behind a covenant is that it's not just about the word, the words in the contract. And that's our society, right? We go by just what's there and no more, quite often. But to go above and beyond and to live by the spirit of a covenant is to be chesed, to be chesed. And you see that today in the Hasidic Jews who go above and beyond their obligations to the Torah. Okay, moving on. Chesed. Naomi says, she's leaving Moab, she's going back, and her two daughters-in-law are coming with her. Because they want to, because she wants them to come with her. And as they're moving along, at some point in the journey, Naomi is starting to think. And emotion is there, right? It's roiling around. But she starts to think a little bit more clearly, and she says this. Go back to your mother's homes, and may the Lord reward you for your kindness, hesed, to your husbands and to me. May the Lord bless you with the security of another marriage. This is selflessness. For Naomi to say to her two daughters-in-law, who are the only things she had left in the world, go home. You have a better chance of a life, a good life, at home than you do with me, is just pure selflessness. She's given up company. She's given up some sort of help, you know, any kind of help, because there was two strong girls that could have helped her. And she's encouraging them to go home. And really, motherhood is a lot about selflessness, right? Well, I mean, it should be. I see a lot of parents that are very selfish, even in my own family. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work very well. A selfish parent is a bad parent. But it is hard to be selfless as a parent, right? It is very hard. Because we think that we deserve something. And it's kind of ironic on Mother's Day. There's quite a few mothers out there that are thinking they deserve something today. And they do.